Okay, so joining me on this episode of Newton Talks is Will Hill, who is a lecturer in media and communications at Canterbury Christchurch University, and he's currently completing a master's project on comic book industries. Hello, Will.
Hello, James.
Hello, and in keeping with his research interests, we're going to be talking a little bit about superhero films and the superhero genre, which is basically all that seems to be happening in blockbuster cinema at the moment. One of the recent films that came out was Spider-Man Far From Home. And you've seen this, haven't you?
I have, yeah, just recently. So.
What was your opinion on Spider-Man Far From Home?
I don't think there's anything about it that's groundbreaking or that has... certainly when you've got the build-up of the last few Avengers and things where it's this monumental, you're expecting people to go and it's got that kind of water closet feel about them. Spider-Man hasn't got that. Which I think in some ways is quite good because it makes it easy to go and watch again. You don't feel like you have to watch 22 films in order to access this. So that makes it more enjoyable. I think Tom Holland, out of all of the Spider-Men, is probably the best because he's the right age for it. And he certainly comes across it. You're not there going, this guy is 30, 40 in school. There's something wrong with this guy. So that again is appealing to the Spider-Man.
How old is he in real life?
I must be 20 now, ballpark. Because he played.
So he's still young.
He's still young. Yeah. Probably older than he should be, but still young. And he seems to have very young sort of sensibilities as a actor.
Yeah.
But he played Billy Elliot on stage. Before going into the Spider-Man roles.
Right, okay.
So he definitely looks as all athletic as well. You're not watching someone where you can sort of pinpoint that a mile away that they shouldn't be doing the moves and the things they should. In terms of the story, it looks like it's... Well, no, it is. They're off on their European vacation and Spider-Man's trying to not pick up the mantle of being a superhero after Iron Man has... fallen in Endgame. Spoilers.
Yeah.
And you've not seen Endgame.
No, but I was aware that Iron Man dies.
Had it. Yeah. So it's that thing of Spider-Man, he's being told by a few people that the responsibility of the superhero mantle falls on him now.
And so it's set after Endgame?
It's not long after Endgame, and it's got this weird sort of school talking. But they use the device in the first Homecoming where they've got two people like on the school-owned TV show and they're sort of saying, there's a reason that you'll now find your classmates from 5 years ago. And it's just an easy device to have some older kids, men, in the classroom.
Oh, okay, yeah, nice.
Again, there's only one of them. Yeah. There's not so many. And it's not fully explained because you're like... they have to come back after 5 years? Weren't they just able to graduate and finish? Or did they graduate and finish and forced back? So that sort of left for a bit of interpretation that we need to see again. But yes, and Spider-Man just wants to fancy the girl, or Peter Parker just wants to fancy the girl and go on his summer holidays or school trip, but it's ambushed by Samuel Jackson's character.
So
Nick Fury.
So he comes in, and so what? Do you notice a difference between, let's say, would this be right to say that this is a kind of new generation of the Marvel film? So Endgame becomes the kind of end of the previous kind of arc, and this is the start of the new arc. Was that fair enough to say?
It certainly feels like that, but Endgame, because Marvel have always done it where they release it with phases. So there's Phase 1, Phase 2, and this was the end of Phase 3, and it's. This was the last film of Phase 3. So right. Marvel recently at Comic-Con released, sort of said what Phase 4 is just about to be. So this was the last one. But you're quite right in the sense that it does have that feeling of... like Endgame was called Endgame. It was very definitive with some of its outgoing characters.
That's quite confusing.
Yes.
But would you be watching it in the future? Would people be watching this in the future as the final... film of that Phase 3, or would they be thinking of it as the start of Phase 4, or is it fit somewhere in between?
Well, it depends what they do with Phase 4, because they may suddenly go, that's the end of this story and arc, and they may, in the way that the Marvel Universe has done, they've always had sort of a trickling of a story going through. So there's this building of conflict between Iron Man and Captain America that sort of kept building.
And that culminates in the Civil War.
That did, yes. And then they pick it up and there's reference to it in Endgame, where they sort of say we used to be friends and we're still trying to get back to this. The slight bickering over what has happened in the past with their characters.
Yeah.
So it does feel like it is sort of a picking up again of we need to continue to work and we need to get back after this monumental event has sort of affected the world. But I guess it's probably the case that Marvel Studios, if they didn't have to make the Spider-Man movie at that point, perhaps wouldn't have. But it's Spider-Man is part-owned film rights anyway by Sony Pictures. And Sony Pictures have are now working in conjunction with Marvel in producing the Spider-Man movies, because you had the original trilogy with Sam Raimi. And going back further, Marvel were in a bit of a state where they were going to go bankrupt in the 90s and sold off loads of their characters for film distributions. And then when Disney bought Marvel, they only bought so many of the properties. So you've got Thor being released by Paramount, I believe it was, or Universal, and Hulk is under someone, another distribution company, and Spider-Man goes off to Sony. So I imagine, because there is that feeling like it's sort of almost tacked on, they probably would have gone, let's give it a bit more of a rest. Whereas you feel like Spider-Man is always going to be out. Hence why we're now seeing Venom movies, and there's one to be coming out, which is another spin-off of sort of a Spider-Man baddie, which is a vampire one called Morbius, with Jared Leto in the role.
And these are are released not by Marvel, but by...
So those two are Sony Pictures. And I think it almost comes up with in association with Marvel rather than produced working with sort of titles. They are separate.
Yeah, and this we talked a little bit about this before privately, where it was this idea of this, and this has led to kind of inconsistencies in the adaptation. So not only have you got that kind of middle two Spider-Man films that isn't the Sam Raimi one, but the ones with Andrew Garfield,
Amazing
Spider-Man, which I really liked. You'd probably tell me that I'm wrong in liking it.
No, there's some great elements in it. There are issues, I think. So certainly the second one, it feels baggy. Andrew Garfield was quite compelling in the role, but there is something about these, I don't know, certainly in the second one where they bookend different stories. So you've got the Green Goblin story, you've got the Electro story, you've got the love story, which I think is portrayed really well and quite closely to the comic story of the death of Gwen Stacy, to the point of actually how she dies with does he save her, does she hit the ground? And they were sort of said in comics actually the fall probably broke her neck before the impact. But they're all done well, but it's that thing, and they've done it for years in superhero movies where it's one baddie isn't enough, let's give them a second baddie, and one story isn't enough, let's give them another, and they just need to ramp it up for whatever reason they feel that's the case. Perhaps it's another line of toys and more figures.
Yeah, it seems a bit kind of, there's a kind of desperation to it, I think. Saying that, I thought they were quite interesting films. I'm not a huge Spider-Man fan, so I'm not really the expert, but I thought they were a pretty engaging couple, Garfield and Emma Stone.
Yeah, well, they were a real couple at the time.
Oh, there you go.
So the chemistry is there. Do we see? And I think,
and I thought Jamie Foxx was very good as well in that second Amazing Spider-Man film.
Yeah, that's debatable.
Right. You know, it's such an old film. We probably won't debate it.
No,
one will be the slightest bit interested in what we think about it. But yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
It was just me. And we also other consistencies. We've got those kind of weird Spider-Man films that kind of happen between the Raimi ones and the new ones, and then you've also got this mix between the X-Men and the Avengers as well. And they've got the character of Quicksilver is in both one of the Avengers movies and is in the X-Men movies separate.
Absolutely. It's
different actor, you know, different iteration of the character, really.
Yeah, and that's all down to, again, the selling of the characters. So X-Men goes to 20th Century Fox, and initially the character of Quicksilver is Magneto's son in X-Men, and they, so when they, which one was it, Days of Future Past comes out, they use his character. At the same time, you've got Avengers Age of Ultron, and they use his character. So what they do to make sure it's okay within whatever deal that they've struck, at no point in Avengers Age of Ultron do they mention that he's a mutant or Magneto, so it's almost a separate character.
Yeah.
So obviously now with Disney buying all of 20th Century Fox, the plan is that later on down the line with their movies, they will be able to start merging, and there'll be a complete reboot probably of the X-Men franchise.
Yeah, interesting. I never liked that Quicksilver character. In the Days of Future Past, that was the first time he appeared in X-Men, is that correct?
Within the films, yeah.
And they've got this big problem, Xavier and Magneto, and they go and literally drag Quicksilver out of his mum's basement, and he's so fucking quick, there's nothing he can't do or probably can't solve, and they literally has to get a bus back to his mum, so they could, if they'd have took him with them, they'd have solved the problem in about three seconds with how quick he is, right? But literally in the film there's a scene where he gets on a bus and has to go back out, so out of the narrative, otherwise he's more powerful than he's too quick. He's too quick, right? He's faster than Superman, and I don't know much about the Flash, but he seems to be faster than the Flash. He's just too quick, right? To make anything even vaguely perilous, yep. as far as I can tell.
And that's an issue that superheroes and have had, where when Superman first started, he was a slight deviation from the creator's detective comic. Like, he's got the same jawline, the same sort of look, so then he can jump a bit further.
He can jump over a building, but he can't fly.
He can punch pretty hard.
Yeah.
But it was always the thing that his moral compass was the thing that kind of saved the day. And then he looked, you know, throughout the decades, he learns to fly, becomes an alien, and all that gets tacked on to the point where he's blowing up planets, he's firing laser beams, and he's doing all these things. And that's when you have a sort of an issue with some of the comics that come out on him, where what do you do with this character? They forget to write about the humanity side, the things that make him really interesting, the Clark Kent. Yeah. Sort of gets kicked to the side a bit.
Yeah, that's really good. I suppose Superman always works because of the he's an alien, and you said he's got the alter ego character, which the X-Men don't have. And there's always something that kind of his innocence drags him down. Right? Yes. Superman, his innocence drags him down. We'll come back to that in a little while when we talk a little bit about Batman versus Superman, which I think is the greatest superhero from the last, you know, probably 30 years.
And just like Jamie Foxx, it's debatable.
I accept. I realise that I'm in a minority when I say that. But yeah, interesting, because those Quicksilver scenes in the X-Men films are like, they utterly ruin the narrative, because he's so quick he could save the day all the time. But at the same time, they're also some of the best scenes.
Gorgeous, and the music that they have to accompany it works really well, and it's really well considered.
Yeah.
There was an episode of the Flash TV series recently. Well, probably like season 5, who knows what it's on now. But they did an episode where there was an atomic bomb that's about to go off, and they did the same thing. So the episode starts, and it's like in 7 minutes into the future, and you see the Flash talking to his partner, saying, "Right, I've tried as hard as I can, but I can't save us this time." And then the story is that he's got 7 minutes to try and defuse this nuclear weapon, and you realise he's running across the city in 7 minutes, and no one else is moving whilst he's working out what to do. And then the next episode, he's getting punched in the face because he can't see this punch coming. You go, you've just destroyed everything, because one week it's this, the next week it's that. And I think often the writers seem to forget the rules that have been set in place. And that's when you have issues with fans suddenly going, "Whoa, what are you doing?" And then especially with the adaptation from comics, where you have a core fan, and then you move over to the film, you have people going, well, actually, perhaps the comic fan's a minority, so we won't worry about it. But that's not the case. I know that Tim Burton, when he made Batman, and they were like, you're casting Michael Keaton, and you're doing this, and his response was, with a budget like mine, I don't need to worry about the comic fans, because they're such a small group. And then Joel Schumacher said something very similar when he made Batman and Robin, and brought in all the sensibilities and the look of Batman 66 kind of vibe, when it had had that huge change.
Yeah.
And there are issues there. And now you've got things like, going back to sort of X-Men, in X-Men, in the first film, you've got the scene where they're about to go on their mission and they've accepted Logan as part of the X-Men team now to go and save Anna Paquin's character. And he's sort of looking at the uniform that they're wearing, and they're in the S&M black outfit gear. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, you know, what is this kind of stuff? And Cyclops is like, would you rather yellow Lycra? Yeah. And there's like the knowing nod to the fan. And you cycle like 10 years later, and they're all in their correct uniforms now. Mm-hmm. And it's there's probably fan backlash. There's just fans getting involved, but also directors, writers, producers going, well, actually, the fans want to see the way it should look. It's also good for marketing and selling toys, and you're not having to deviate from that. But I think there's just more of an awareness of adapting it more appropriately. And that's feeding into the stories sometimes, where you see much sort of stronger, like this, it was the story within the comics, and then it translated onto film. Sometimes they deviate in place of going back to Spider-Man. The Jake Gyllenhaal character, Mysterio, in the comics, he's a pyrotechnic special effects guy. Within this, he's a failed sort of scientist working on a drone footage. But what's quite clever is they tie that into some of the other movies. So there's a sequence in Civil War where Robert Downey Jr.'s character is giving a lecture, and there's a young Robert Downey Jr. talking to his dad. In it, and you find out that Jake Gyllenhaal had created this performance capture, but that kind of thing with these projections. So then he's upset that it's not being used to greater good.
Yeah,
and that's what is the catalyst for him becoming evil in the new one.
So there was an announcement, wasn't there? Was it at the Comic Con, or when they announced the Marvel Phase 4?
Yes,
is that correct? And what were some of the changes that they've? They've suggested there. I think one of them was that they were going to change the Thor character. A woman was going to take on the mantle of Thor, like in some of the comics. Is that correct?
So Natalie Portman's character is coming back. So she has a brief appearance in Endgame. So I think I can't remember, I had read at the time if she was only contracted to 2, and then for Thor 3 she was going to be in it, or if she didn't enjoy the process of the Marvel films, but is back, and the same director of Thor Ragnarok will be doing it, Taika Waititi, who's done The Boys and Hunt for the Wilder People. So he's got a really good...
Yeah, the New Zealand film.
Yes. So he's doing it. But yeah, the character of Thor, it's supposed to be that whoever is worthy wields the power of Thor, rather than... And then Thor is obviously the lightning and the hammer, and Mjolnir, the hammer. So... In the comics, there's a section where Thor becomes sort of fat and useless and flies around the cosmos with a goat rather than the flying hammer, because he hasn't got that anymore. And instead, it's picked up. I think there's one where it's his mum, and there might even be one where it's Jane Foster as well. But yes, they're sort of using that story. So that is actually what's happened in the comics.
Yeah.
It makes complete sense. But then thinking of what I was saying about keeping comic book fans happy by doing true adaptations, you then have this issue where you've got there was an issue called Comicsgate, where you've got these people who believe, especially Marvel, well, the different creators within comics, but are pining and doing things that aren't the way that they would like to see their comics. So in the 90s, you've got massive chested, huge looking superheroes, predominantly white, predominantly 30, and now you're starting to see more black characters, women characters, and they should, because there's a demographic with the readership and the people producing comics. I mean, I think it was last year, there's a website called Comicron that does looks at who's reading what, and they said actually more women are reading comics than men last year, so it makes complete sense. But these people still argue that that shouldn't be the case, and I'm sure there'll be protests over the idea that Thor's a woman, just like when Disney released their actress for the new Little Mermaid film, mm-hmm. and she was a young black girl, mm-hmm. the hashtag not my Ariel started going yeah. around, and then you've got responses just saying, how many mermaids have you seen?
Yeah. I mean, those things, it's just strange. It seems to be like there's a need for that kind of, I mean, I suppose that's a different kind of conversation. There's need for, it's part of the kind of culture war, isn't it? And people, you know, you wonder how much they really care about the character of Ariel, that they invent that hashtag. And sometimes it's these things are almost kind of false flag, and you kind of invent it just to kind of draw the kind of the ire to make the other side look bad.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't see how there could be any issue with the Jane Foster character in Thor. Is that correct?
Yes.
Because if that's from the comics, then. Then it's already an established story, like pathway. The same way with I didn't watch the Spider-Man multiverse one, but I guess this idea of different people, was it different kind of characters embodying Spider-Man? Is that the kind of
that's terrific. Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah, that's it. That's the Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah, it's really really good. Potentially the best Spider-Man film.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So it's. The story of Miles Morales, who was written by a comic creator called Brian Michael Bendis, who'd worked on Spider-Man for something like 17, 20 years, and has now been hired by DC to sort of work on Superman and bring Superman up to speed. But he created this sort of mixed race, his mum's Puerto Rican, I think, and then black police officer father. And so you've got him negotiating his parents and his life, and then how he becomes Spider-Man, but in a world where Spider-Man already exists. A spoiler, Chris Pine, who with that very sort of soft, eloquent, delicate voice, is Spider-Man at first, and then Miles Morales witnesses him being murdered by the Kingpin, and it's then how he can, bit like the other one, pick up the mantle and be Spider-Man, because he's given a role to do. But within that, there's this dimension harnessing, bringing together, which opens this portal somehow, and other Spider-Men come in, one of which is Spider-Man, who's in his 30s, was now not married to Mary Jane, so he's put on a bit of weight, a bit more apathetic with the world. There's a cartoon one who's Spider-Ham, and then there's Nicolas Cage as a Spider-Noir, sort of a 1930s detective who's all fisticuffs, mm-hmm. And then Spider Gwen, and then an anime girl who fights in a spider robot, and then they all work together. But in terms of sort of story and visuals, what they did there was really compelling. So you've got playing with the comic tropes of gutters and just the pacing of things and the frame rate, rather than having things sort of come up constantly. There's sort of a jilted stop to stuff to make it almost have this more graphic look to it. It was sort of used poorly by Ang Lee in Hulk. People would argue where that took you out of the film, whereas this is sort of deployed.
Was that what he was trying to do?
Well, you have those moments where you have the panels sort of come up onto the screen within it.
Oh, right, I can't remember.
Yeah.
I've seen moments. It a couple of times, though.
There's a few issues with that one of not having a baddie. And sort of you're just watching this story slowly unfold, which can work very well, but in a film where you're going to see the Hulk smash,
yeah,
you expect to see that. And
I don't think I have issues with CGI action films, as you know, but yes. I think even back then the effects were good, but not up to what they clearly are now. I mean, the stuff that you're watching when you look at one of the Avengers films, which, but by and large, I generally don't. You know, I'm not a huge fan of them. But they, you know, they look fantastic. You know, it's pretty seamless in what you're seeing, and in terms of the motion and the movement of the CG characters. Whereas I think Hulk was probably made 5 to 10 years too early, really, to be able to pull it off. You know, everything's always every film, I guess, every special effects film is always operating at the absolute limit of its capabilities, really. Does that make sense? So it's always falls short in some respects, you know. And then you look back, oh, if they had that technology now, back then it would have been far better. But they're always operating at the absolute extent of their capabilities. So you have to expect a little bit of that. Yeah. But when I watched the most recent one I saw was Captain Marvel. The effects there are pretty terrific, really. You know what you're getting, and it's like looking into a comic book, you know. In that you're looking at a world that's been created. It's almost entirely artificial, but it blends the fantastical with the real. And what you had there with the most remarkable effect in that is Samuel L. Jackson as a younger man. I mean, fantastic, and looked far better than if you've seen the trailer to The Irishman, the new Martin Scorsese movie, where Joe Pesci, Robert De Niro, and that looks dreadful. They look like lizard men. It looks really bad. It looks like, you know, the Moff Tarkin at the end of Rogue One. It's like this, all of a sudden there's a lizard on the screen, and it looks like that. Whereas the Captain Marvel one, with Sam Jackson, I thought was really good. I thought that really worked, you know. And you wonder where they're going to go with that. You know, well, I mean, the possibilities of that are endless.
Oh, absolutely.
That's why I say what I want to see is Timothy Dalton back as James Bond. that's the first thing they should do with this, right? Anyway, that's another conversation. So yeah, the effects are really good. And that the Spider-Verse one, they tried to bring in that kind of different animation styles as well, as you say, the anime as well, with the kind of panels and the kind of slightly juddery effect. That's really interesting. I mean, I suppose the look of these, I mean, one of the reasons, and we might as well shift to it now because we can talk a little bit about Marvel and DC, one of the reasons why I like Batman vs Superman so much, I think, was because of what Zack Snyder tried to do with the look of the film. And the fight at the end with Doomsday, I think, is pretty incredible. I mean, he makes it look as if he's using a handheld camera in some of these shots. It's utterly insane what's actually happening, what you're looking at on screen. And I remember being completely blown away by that, especially since it had got such terrible reviews. And I know we've talked about this film before, but you know what are your thoughts on Batman vs Superman, and why am I so wrong in suggesting it's the best one for 30 years, best superhero film for 30 years?
I think, certainly you mentioned someone going in with what you anticipate, and I think that's one of the huge issues with it. So you go in anticipating to have, people have known the characters, and they're both sort of nearly 80 years and past 80 years old. So you have gone in expecting a Superman that saves the day, that saves people, that is joyous, has perhaps, you know, fun lines, has some humanity more than most humans have. You've got a Batman character that you've... When you get the movie version of a comic, you almost want to see all of the best versions, because you know that you, as a comic fan, know the story, so they're going to try and put it out there for a wider audience. So you're expecting to see the pinnacle of them. You're given a Batman that is remarkably grumpy, is incredibly hateful of the world, and is willing to kill. And for every movie that he's ever been in, that's always been his big no-no. And I know sort of Zack Snyder's gone on the record and said, oh, if he's seen the things that he's seen, then there's a point to it, there's a reason. And he's saying, you know, it's because he's seen these atrocities and he's seen Superman kill lots of people. So his justification of it is that he saw Superman killing people and flying into buildings. So he's going to kill and be angry about that. And you know, well, which one is it? Like, he either doesn't like people being killed or he's going to do it himself.
Yeah. I mean, they put him up against some pretty nasty villains. It's a very nasty film, actually. I mean, you watch I've seen it in the cinema once. It was really good, and then after that I saw the director's cut version, and it's astonishingly violent. I mean, it's got people being shanked in prison and all sorts of business happening in it. And it's like it's pretty dark stuff. And it is violent. It's a very violent film, and possibly does over-egg it as regards the audience that we're talking about, really.
I mean, I can't think of a single superhero film that, when you think of superheroes, certainly comics, for years they've had this feeling that they are for children. I can't think of one superhero film that I would feel comfortable taking. Even Incredibles 2, it's either incredibly long, or there's a middle section with a baddie where you're like, I've got a 4-year-old at home, and they're just either telling stories that are quite mature and adult, or they're not appropriate for children. Mm-hmm. Like the Avengers films are 2 hours plus.
Yeah,
and they're not kids' films. No. They're definitely 12 plus, mm-hmm. and even 12-year-olds I can't see. But Batman versus Superman, especially. I mean, again, Superman's not supposed to kill anyone, but we've seen him fly through hundreds of buildings in Man of Steel, kill Zod at the end, and then.
He flew through them when he's fighting with Zod, doesn't he? Doesn't he?
Yeah, he doesn't take anyone out. But then you've got the scene where he goes to rescue Lois Lane, mm-hmm. and there's a guy who goes to shoot Lois, if I remember right. Again, I've not seen it for a few years. And he pummels him through about 3 walls.
Yes, he does.
He's going to liquidise his body doing that.
I like to think that Superman is breaking the walls with his fists before. So it's just a shock that he's given the man. That's the way I see it.
Yeah. Well, here's hoping.
Otherwise, the results wouldn't be
great. And one of the first people that he meets, and I don't know, because I've done the same as you, I've seen... saw it initially at the cinema and then I saw the extended cut, but you find out either in the full version or the extended, I can't remember, that one of the characters there working in the military is Jimmy Olsen, and Jimmy Olsen dies.
Yeah,
sort of fan favourite, Superman's best friend, the one person who idolises Superman is dead.
Yeah,
for no reason. No. There's absolutely no reason to...
No.
It's sort of having a fan nod and going, oh, Jimmy's there. Perhaps he's going to be a photographer. No, he's army. Oh, no, he's dead.
Yeah, yeah. And he gets killed in a pretty nasty way as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's... That's true. I mean, I would agree with what you're saying. These points that you've made to me before and other people have made to me before, I think this, in many ways, that's inarguable. I can see definitely why people didn't like it. I think what people are ignoring with Batman versus Superman, I'm aware this is hardly topical, but are the good things that it brings. And it's got some terrific stuff with Superman saving people, some great montages, the montage of him just the shot of him dragging the oil tanker across the ice, the shot of the people on the in the flood with the SOS signal on there, and they look up and they're looking up in awe, and then he's just kind of hovering in the sky above them like a god. And the scenes with all the people trying to touch him as well, where, you know, as if he's like, again, as if he's a god. I thought that stuff was marvellous. And what I really like about it is that you've got Superman who's innocent. I mean, he's getting it from all sides, right? Even Batman's having a go at him. Everyone's giving him grief, you know, and blaming him for things that are happening which weren't his fault. And it really is that kind of put-upon figure of Superman. If you want to go down, people have talked about this, the idea of the Christ myth and stuff, and it's very much playing on that, I think, and those bits I thought outweighed all the bad. And I expected it to be, you know, you typically switch off when you've got people fighting and flying in the sky, but the climax I thought was really well handled as well. I thought not only the effects, but what they were trying to do, something that I hadn't seen before, not just render what was happening, but also make the camera work and make it actually quite shocking what you're seeing in that fight with Doomsday at the end. But I do take the negatives as well, or very much the missteps they've taken with the characters, particularly Batman.
Yeah, and I think that is, it's that thing of you knowing and liking a character and then seeing it represented in ways that you're not expecting. I mean, I don't think you can necessarily... I mean, Karate Kid and Rocky have good montages. Mm-hmm. Actually, Karate Kid and Rocky are great films. Mm-hmm. But you wouldn't talk about the whole of their films based on montages. And they're great scenes. Mm-hmm. And I think what Zack Snyder is good at, looking at 300 and Watchmen, is taking from a page what's already sort of laid out onto screen. So that kind of moment of him pulling an oil tanker looks terrific because it's almost a one painting. You know, yeah. He can create a lovely looking shot. I don't necessarily think his storytelling is always magnificent, perhaps because he doesn't, you don't feel that he's either connected with the characters fully or coming up with his own story. But that then might be whoever is writing the story. So that's David Goyer and Chris Tiro, I believe. And they have full responsibility. And I think often when we're talking about films, we forget. It's not always the director's fault. And he's obviously got a lot of stick for the outcome of this. I mean, it cost him, well, that and I think Family Tragedy, Justice League, and they got Joss Whedon in.
Justice League was a strange one, really, because when they released the trailers not long after Batman vs Superman, it looked fantastic. When the film came out 18 months later, some of the special effects looked worse in the finished film than they did in the trailer. I can't quite work out what happened with that. Why it regressed so badly, regardless of what.
Yeah, so Batman vs Superman comes out and makes all of the money still, but is critically kind of panned. Mm-hmm. Then, and they've already got plans to do Justice League, hence the kind of the shoo-in of the here's Aquaman looking like Derek Zoolander, here's Wonder Woman, Flash and Cyborg with their top secret files that already have the embossed logo created that look perfect, but no one's supposed to see these files. Then
I like that bit.
It's just poor.
agree to differ on
it. Yeah. Then you have has already started working on Justice League, and at this point DC are playing catch up to Marvel, even though you've got things like the Dark Knight movie coming out in the same year as Iron Man, and they're sort of they've let it slide, let things change and win out at this state. So he's planning to make Justice League incredibly quickly rather than individual films, which is fine and doable, but he's shoehorning it into Batman vs Superman, which just really inflates that. And then you've got this thing where I believe Zack Snyder's daughter commits suicide and they've lost sort of faith in him as well with the sort of the story, so he either steps down from the project or gets fired. But the turnaround time that they have, it's a bit like a James Bond film where the release date is already agreed before they're filming. So that's agreed, but now they've got a new director in who is being told, who's Joss Whedon, who made Avengers, let's make this a bit more funny, a bit more quirky, let's do all the things that Marvel are doing that we know you do. I mean, if you look at Joss Whedon's history of like Buffy, Firefly, Serenity, these are all Dark Angel, these are all fun, like lots of nodding, happy kind of jovial traits. Zack Snyder hasn't got any of these in his back catalogue. They're dark and gritty. So you've got two directors from very different backgrounds trying to make the same film. Eventually what comes out is this ripped apart thing, but in answer to your question, the visual effects people get them with months to turn it round. So what may have been filmed gets ripped out and you then have new stuff being filmed that's still got that release date.
Yeah.
And then there's sort of always fans online sort of talking about this Snyder cut that's waiting to come out because they think that there'll still be bits that he's filmed that's not seen the light of day, but it will be stuff that has had any post-production and will look ropey, but it's supposed to be wildly different.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's sort of, and initially it was going to be that sort of one of the big DC villains, Dark Side, is at the end and comes out, and it was supposed to have this world-ending bleakness to it.
Yeah, it did. I mean, it doesn't work Justice League on not nearly any level, really. I think that's a shame because I think we could argue about whether we like the films or not, the DC films, but I think their casting's really good. And I think the cast of Wonder Woman, Batman and Superman especially was fantastic. It's terrible to think that that Ben Affleck and Henry Cavill are not going to play those roles again. I mean, I think it's a real waste, if nothing else.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think Henry Cavill, especially, because I think obviously Gal Gadot has got Wonder Woman 2 coming out, and I think they're doing well. Ben Affleck, I think whilst people were worried with him going in, I think a lot of people actually quite liked his interpretation. But I think Henry Cavill came off the worst, unfairly so. I think Because they're like, oh, again, like I was saying, Superman should have the joy and the humanity side. I think he's got it in him as an actor. I think if you've seen his other roles in like The Tudors or Man from U.N.C.L.E. and plenty of others, he can bring that. So that I think they just removed it from him. And that's where it's sort of lining these up. It's almost a shame because Man of Steel, whilst I quite like the beginning part with him, kind of Bourne Identity style, less so as soon as it becomes the CGI fight fest. And then it ends with him with sort of the Christopher Reeve look. You're like, oh, we're going to see Clark Kent in the next one. And then they decide not to do the next one and they do Batman versus Superman. And when they announced that, that was at a Comic-Con. And they read the lines from The Dark Knight Returns of when Batman and Superman are in conflict. But it didn't necessarily mean that we had to see that. Or again, Batman vs. Superman is a pinnacle graphic novel. And they shoehorn in the Doomsday well. So you've got multiple stories. Death of Superman comes in. You've got... what's his name? Jesse Eisenberg as sort of this young manic Lex Luthor. And again, it's that kind of thing of handing the baton over to someone. So you're going, right, we're not going to have that Clark Kent. Right, you're Lex Luthor in the comics as a brilliant scientist, then he's a businessman, and then eventually he winds up as the president. Sort of, and lots of that was sort of foreshadowing Donald Trump's rise. And there's great stories that they could have done on screen that could have mirrored things going on. Well, that was pre-Donald Trump, but it would have been very interesting to see that story. Mm. And you're ruining that. So again, that baton, you're sort of watching Batman vs. Superman going, they're going to need to reboot this. Like whoever gets that baton passed to them as a director goes, I don't want him killing, or I don't want this, or right, you brought Doomsday up, but you killed Superman, right? And it's, so there isn't comic books since the death of Superman. No, everyone can die and everyone can come back to life. There isn't anyone that sort of stays dead. But perhaps film viewers going in might not have that same anticipation. So to really waste it feels a shame.
I only think they've wasted it because of the subsequent films, though.
Yes.
I think with Batman vs. Superman made enough money that they could have if the next one would have been any good,
yeah,
they could have carried it on, because after that they had Wonder Woman, which did very well and got, yep, which was not a bad movie.
Yep.
And I think it's as good as what people say, but it's not bad. And it was successful and critically acclaimed as, yep, well. And then Aquaman got kind of 3-star reviews.
Made lots and lots of money.
Made lots of money. But Justice League in the middle of that was pretty much a disaster. All ends up. And as far as I know, that line they've kind of pretty much given up on it. Really, I think the next Batman is starring Robert Pattinson.
Yep.
And so they're going to have a completely different take. Yes. To the bulked up Ben Affleck version, which is interesting again, but I guess they're dropping that kind of DC Universe style.
It certainly feels that way. So they're doing side projects where they said that they would get more interesting, but directors who perhaps wouldn't have blockbuster experience. So you've got Todd Phillips, who's done the Hangover movies, yeah, and Due Date and a few other the comedies. He did something else quite dark, I can't remember what. But he's doing the Joker movie with Joaquin Phoenix, which is supposed to be more of a psychological portrayal of breakdown.
Yeah, that's what the trailer seems to suggest, yeah.
So that looks like it might be quite interesting, but it might not have any superheroes in it. It might just be the fall down of a man.
Yeah.
So... It could be very interesting, but completely separate. And I don't think, from what I've read, he's drawing too much on comics. There's one sort of famous comic called The Killing Joke by Alan Moore, where you see a potential for how the Joker became where he was. But that's a line that's in Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight, with the Joker constantly giving different stories that people quite like, that there is no definitive how he got these scars, as it were, that it's always... changing.
So we're kind of shifting again, because the Suicide Squad was part of that.
Yes,
was part of the DC Universe, the rival to Marvel.
Yep.
And that didn't really work. I thought it had some utterly amazing scenes in that, particularly the ones with the Joker and Harley Quinn, I thought were really good. But overall, you know, weak. And Ben Affleck's in that as Batman as yep. well. So, I mean, it seems a shame, and it seems like an extraordinary loss of confidence in the studio to just kind of give up on this and kind of shift again. But maybe that's the maybe that's what they have to do. And I suppose around, so you've got this Marvel and DC. You've got these. I mean, it seems to be the kind of way that morality is played out in cinema. I think there was a time when it used to be played out in war movies or westerns, whereas now I think it's pretty much superhero films. We've talked about things like Brightburn. You've got also the Watchmen. There's a new Watchmen adaptation on HBO that's either out or coming out soon. Yep. The Deadpool character as well that floats around this stuff, kind of commenting on these. The series. Does Deadpool make comments about Batman and Superman in yours? Does he only make comments about X-Men?
I'm pretty sure he does. I think he certainly makes comment about Green Lantern, and Green Lantern's DC
because he was in that. Yeah. Ryan Reynolds.
I'm pretty sure he does. But then you've got Teen Titans Go, which is the kids' film. But then they did a film called Teen Titans Go to the Movie, and their nemesis in that is a chap called Deathstroke,
right?
Who was initially, Marvel and DC have this history of pinching each other's characters and just renaming it. And Deathstroke is Deadpool. But they have a bit in that where Robin keeps calling him Deadpool. And they're like, don't you look like Deadpool? And they're like, I'm not. Yeah. So they're at a stage. But they've also worked together in comics. You've had Justice League and Avengers teaming up. And yeah, there's sort of lots of crossovers.
Deathstroke appears at the end of Batman vs. Superman
as well. Yeah. And that was initially one of the plans was to start bringing in and do sort of the bad guy team up, as it were. And then Ben Affleck had wrote a screenplay for what was going to be his Batman movie with Geoff Johns, and that ended up sort of disappearing. And I've forgotten his name, Joe Mangdagli, I don't know the pronunciation, but the chap who was going to be Deathstroke was signed on to be in that.
That's really interesting. I think is there going to be another Deadpool movie? Is that the intention? I would imagine there would be.
I'm not sure since Disney have bought 20th Century Fox what then happens, because Disney don't do much in terms of R-rated movies, and to strip that from the character would kind of kill it.
Yeah. What was your opinions of those two Deadpool movies?
I think I thoroughly enjoyed them. I've seen both a few times. I think I prefer the first to the second. It's got more of a grit. I think sometimes with the second movie, a sequel, you get that thing of going, at this point in the first one we did this, let's meet that beat again. So we're in the car with the character at this moment, and it's almost time-wise sort of the same sort of certain actions happen. I think it relies a bit on that too much. There are certain scenes like towards the end with the death taking ages, which are very funny and well done. But yeah, I think I like the idea of this very small, low budget film that somehow was unexpected. A bit like Logan. Oh, Logan wasn't unexpected, but that low budget just telling a really good, gritty story.
And it's low key.
That's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. Yeah, I mean that. Yeah, they certainly had interesting bits about it. Certainly the first half of that Logan film. I think that's interesting, the way that they kind of have these other stranger superhero films that are kind of floating around the edges, or more kind of either more marginal or more low key or more irreverent. I mean, the problem I have with Deadpool is it still costs millions and millions and millions to make, and it's hard to be truly irreverent and truly flippant when every decision is costing you $10 million, right? And so I don't think it's ever quite as flippant and as fast and as funny as what it either should be or what it thinks it is, although there's no doubt that there's some bits that are really good. Certainly in the sequel, the whole sequence with the X-Force.
Yes, that's hilarious. Superb.
Very good.
And I think initially when they had marketed it in America, they had posters of Terry Crews as a major character, and then he's only in it for seconds.
Yeah.
But they advertised it in a way of at some point, and X-Force are their own comics identity as it is, so it really is. And I think there had even been talks before and after of saying, well, the next movie won't be Deadpool 3, it will use the X-Force team. So again, you're going in. So that was a real shock that they would bump them all off, as it were.
Yeah. And as well as that, you've got, I think it's quite important when you've got something that's so prolific, these superhero films, and I'll be throwing them all in together, but they share iconography, they share conventions. I think it's fair to think of them as a genre. It's important to have ones that are kind of meta commentary on that and kind of reflect on that, on their place in culture as well. So Deadpool could occupy that space. You've also got films that have been made over the years, like I'm thinking of Super, I think James Gunn, who ends up directing Guardians of the Galaxy, where it's about a superhero who hasn't got any powers. He's got almost, you know, mentally he's having a breakdown.
Yeah.
And I've not seen it, but Defender was another one with Woody Harrelson playing a similar character, and also a little bit like it was Kick-Ass as well, which of course is based on a comic book. But you also have actual superheroes that come into that. So those are an interesting kind of iteration, I think, of the genre as well, where they can comment on what's happening in the kind of mainstream versions, which I guess is what Watchmen originally intended to do with the Alan Moore comic book in the 1980s.
Absolutely. I mean, I haven't seen it yet, but you've also got the Amazon Prime TV series The Boys, which I know from the comic certainly starts with a chap going to a funfair with his partner, and you've got a bad guy running past, and he's like, oh look, it's so and so the bad guy, but actually then the good guy runs through and like decapitates the girl's arms.
Okay, yeah.
And then everyone's cheering the good guy for capturing the bad, and that's how it sort of starts. Mm-hmm. But that's very much that kind of acknowledging the other roles of the superhero and the cultural effects. But comics have had a history of sort of, in terms of the broader what's going on, reflecting sort of society, that often the stories that are within it. So X-Men comes about due to sort of race politics, and Civil War, which was sort of the big one with Iron Man, takes up, was based on Mark Miller going to America after 9/11 and feeling this fractious sort of city.
His initial comic book.
It's
a two-part series, I think.
There is a second part that's come out, but years later.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, so it was just one. Interesting. So this is probably a question that you can't answer. So obviously I'm gonna ask. Where do you see this genre ending? How is it going to peter out? What's going to happen? Is it just going to be pure saturation point? Is it going to be there's not enough stories to tell? It's difficult to know, because unlike the Western, where people are kind of just tired of it, comic books are still becoming more and more popular. And so I wonder what the end point of this genre is going to be.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, you'll get things, I think everyone does get tired of oversaturation. So you'd look at the idea of them, I mean, they are going to, but like the Disney making Star Wars, and how after the last one, and then Solo came out. I mean, I think that was poor marketing by whoever was in charge of distributing it at a May time, rather than go, right, we'll wait till Christmas, it's going to be the Christmas release.
5 months after the previous one, when it was still in the memory, it seemed like a really bizarre decision.
Odd. Haven't got one coming out at Christmas, shift it there.
And I think Solo was a good movie.
Solo was great. Yeah. Solo is the closest to the Star Wars films that we've had since the Star Wars.
I agree. I thought it was really good.
But I think, I mean, at the moment we're seeing Marvel releasing nearly 3 movies a year. DC seem to be on their path to do 2 a year. So I think that would have to decline. You would look at blockbusters in the summer. But what they are doing is, I mean, when... So the chap who seems to be like the mastermind behind the Marvel Universe, a chap called Kevin Feige, and he said, when they were talking about killing off characters, he went, well, it's fine to kill off characters because we've got hundreds of characters to play with. So rather than doing a soft reboot every year, he was just like, oh, I'll dip in and I'll get new characters. So with the Phase 4 that they announced, a lot of it is new characters that people haven't heard. And then you have the, well, this won't be a successful film, and Guardians of the Galaxy proved wrong. That was one of the more popular films that was considered more like the Star Wars films and a bit genre changing in its sci-fi and aliens. So they'll keep shifting. And these comics have already been written, like you say, for Marvel, because it was Atlas Comics until the 60s, have been with Stan Lee's sort of plethora of superheroes have been going since the 60s. There's a wealth of characters and stories that they can keep dipping into.
And it seems to be bottomless.
Absolutely.
And there'll be more that'll
and
be
there'll
written.
Be more constantly being written. And Disney, with the Phase 4 announcement, said that their streaming service, Disney Plus, are going to have series that will use the characters. So Loki, Tom Hiddleston will be playing, has his own series. There's WandaVision with the Scarlet Witch and Paul Bettany's character. There's Winter Soldier and Falcon. They've got their own series. And it may be that more and more of this will come onto the streaming service, but as streaming services increase and get more and more popular, and it may be that more of it shifts over there. But I can't see it stopping anytime soon. You then have comics that aren't superheroes. So obviously we are specifically talking about superheroes today, but there are films like Road to Perdition. I mean, there's loads and loads
Walking
of films.
Dead.
But absolutely, it's hugely important. Mm-hmm. So you may find it's that thing, the way it just slightly shifts, that you've had Marvel Zombies before, written by Robert Kirkman, who did The Walking Dead. So you just to have your superheroes that you know and love, just change it slightly. Video games are becoming more and more popular.
I suppose it's all a part of the idea of kind of convergence as well.
Yes.
The stories happening across different platforms. And maybe we just see a greater prominence of graphic novels, I guess, is something that could happen. And I suppose the thing, I mean, just mentioning that, all the potential TV series or streaming services, shows that are coming out, it does seem like it's, this is no time soon that this is going to end.
No.
But I suppose we will be reliant on something to replace them. Something has to replace these films.
Something at some point.
And that's trying to anticipate what that could be.
Yeah.
But if you could anticipate what that can be, we'd be billionaires.
Brilliant. Yeah, and just thinking with the streaming service and the stories being told and how it can change. So Hawkeye, he's going to have a streaming service. And there's a series written by a chap called Matt Fraction and the art by David Arjo, I believe it's pronounced, where it cuts out the fight scenes. So he'll be suiting up, getting ready to go out, and then you have him sitting at home eating pizza, reflecting on it with like a black eye and stuff. And the idea that you've got these different, more adult stories that, as you sort of say, sometimes the CGI fighting is the bit we like the least, and I certainly think that was the case for me with Endgame. Everything leading up to that final fight I was involved with, and then, well, I know what's going to happen here. That's the end. So there are more ways of doing it, and that could almost feel like a EastEnders style soap opera. You know, you then go, right, the superhero genre exists with the characters that you know and love for the last few years, but who wants to watch Doc Cotton when you can watch Thor interacting in the pub with Spider-Man? You know, just like James Bond has gone on for years and years and years, it's a new actor's replaced, but I think there's just a different way of shifting and telling it. So it could be that these characters, whilst the superhero movie might disappear, it may be that the stories, the characters don't.
Yeah, well, I think you're absolutely correct there. The characters won't, because they haven't yet.
Yeah.
Right? And so they've existed in some form and got more popular. Since the 30s, probably before that, you might know best. But yeah, well, we'll leave it there, and we'll pick this up when the next superhero film comes out, which will probably be in a week's time. Right. Thanks very much.
Thank you, James.
Cheers.